So, when you picture something made in Vietnam, say a custom metal part, do you just assume the steel or aluminum comes from right there? Like locally sourced? I know I kind of did.
Yeah, it's a common assumption, I think.
Until I ran into the situation that really, well, it opened my eyes. So today we're taking a deep dive into exactly that raw material sourcing for these custom metal parts coming out of Vietnam.
Right, figuring out if the factories making and exporting them are actually using local stuff or bringing it in from elsewhere.
Exactly. And we're basing this on some really interesting points from an article called Vietnam Metal Manufacturing: Local versus Imported Materials.
Yeah, and our mission really is to unpack how this whole mix, local versus imported, directly hits those things you care about.
You mean like cost and how long it takes to get your parts?
And even just, is your project actually doable with the Vietnamese factory? Considering the materials, we want to give you a shortcut to understanding that.
So my story was I needed some 316L stainless steel parts, right? And specifically ask for traceable mill certs.
Okay, standard requirement for many applications.
Right. And suddenly the price quote jumped and the lead time got way longer. And it's like, boom, aha,
No,
got it.
because you assumed local sourcing.
Totally. And it turned out, nope, that specific stainless, especially with the certs, had to be imported.
And that experience, it really nails the core reality here. Factories in Vietnam, they absolutely use both local and imported materials for custom metal parts.
It's a mix.
It's definitely a mix, basic steel, some standard aluminum profile. Sure, you can often get that domestically.
Oh.
But the moment you get into higher spec stuff, like specific alloy steels, aircraft grade aluminum, that's almost always imported.
And that mix, as you found out the hard way, directly hits your cost, your lead time, and yeah, the overall feasibility.
That difference really came through in the source material we looked at. It gave this example, like a supplier down in Binh Dong,
Yeah.
they could get their hands on standard construction steel super fast, no problem.
Okay, makes sense for local building projects and such.
Exactly. But then, if you ask that same supplier for, say, heat-treated tool steel, or maybe certain copper alloys,
Then what?
then they had to turn to imports immediately. Which begs the question you raised, why the gap? Is it tech scale?
Yeah, why can't they just make it all there?
Well, it's kind of a mix of things. If you break it down, what's typically available locally? It's stuff like rebar, basic lawn steel, standard hot rolled coil, HRC, and coated sheet steel, like GI that's galvanized or PPGI, the pre-painted kind. Standard aluminum extrusions, too.
Then those are used for.
Think construction, simple brackets, general fabrication work, enclosures, metal covers, that sort of thing.
Got it. The more basic applications.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But the materials that are mostly imported, those are the precision grade metals you need for things like CNC machining or complex stamping, specialized welding.
It's like what specifically?
We're talking mechanical grade steels like your 4140, 4340, S45C,
Yeah.
the kinds essential for machine parts needing tight tolerances. Then stainless steel like 304, 316, vital for anything needing corrosion resistance. Definitely aircraft grade aluminum 6061, 7075, which you absolutely need for aerospace, medical parts, critical stuff.
Okay.
And even things like copper and brass, often used for electrical components or maybe just for looks, they're largely imported too.
So why the focus difference?
Well, the big domestic producers like Hoa Phat or Formosa Hot Tin, their business model is really geared towards the bulk market, construction steel, basic materials, huge volumes.
Okay, scale for basic materials.
Exactly. So for the kind of export grade custom parts that maybe you're ordering needing specific alloys or properties, most of that specialized material still has to come from outside.
From where mostly?
Typically China, Japan, Korea, Taiwan,
Yeah.
because those specific grades, they just aren't made locally in the quantities or sometimes to the exact international standards export markets demand.
Wow. And that statistic we saw, Vietnam importing over 14 million tons of steel last year, even with their own big mills running full tilt.
Yeah.
That really drives home how much they rely on imports, doesn't it? Makes you think about the bigger picture for supply chains.
It really does. Those numbers, they paint a clear picture of Vietnam's heavy dependence, particularly on that high-spec mechanical steel that fuels its metalworking sector.
Can you give us those numbers again? They were pretty stark.
Sure. So roughly 13.1 million tons of total steel imports. And get this, about 9.25 million tons of that came just from China.
Wow, the lion's share.
Yeah. Then another, say, 3.5 million tons combined from Japan and Korea. Plus, they imported almost 5 million tons of steel scrap to feed their own production.
So when you add it all up...
When you add it all up, Vietnam's domestic production only covers about maybe 42%, let's say 41.9% to be precise, of its total industrial steel demand.
Less than half.
Less than half. And again, the reason is that local focus on basic construction stuff, not the precision alloys needed for advanced manufacturing or export. I-alloy steels, certified steels with specific traceability... They're just not produced locally at the scale or to the specs needed for many export products.
And you mentioned standards.
Yeah, that's key too. Meeting the specific requirements for, say, US or EU markets. Things like certain surface finishes, flatness tolerances, and especially that documented material traceability, the mill certs you mentioned.
Huh?
That often just forces the use of imported materials that are already certified to meet those international standards.
So the practical result for someone ordering parts is, well, it sounds like for many projects, your supplier first has to order the material itself.
That's often the case, yes.
Which naturally just stretches out the whole timeline.
Absolutely. Lead times are a major consequence.
Yeah.
When the raw material has to be imported, you should generally expect that to add anywhere from, say, 2 to maybe 4 weeks onto your total delivery time.
2 to 4 weeks just waiting for material.
Potentially, yeah. And it depends on a few things.
Like what?
Well, where's it coming from? Shipping from China is usually quicker than from, say, Europe.
Okay.
What kind of import process is used? Sometimes they use duty-free bonded processing, which can be faster than going through full customs clearance.
Ah, interesting.
Supplier inventory is a big one, obviously.
Yeah.
If they happen to have your specific material in stock, great, much faster. But if they have to place a spot order just for your job...
You wait.
You wait. The volume of your order matters, too. Sometimes for small quantities, minimum order quantities, or MOQs, can mean your supplier has to wait to bundle your need with others before placing the material order.
Right. Makes sense for them economically.
And then there's inspection and certification. Just reviewing the mill test certificates, the MTCs, or if you require extra lab testing, that can easily add another day or maybe 3 days.
It all adds up.
It really does. Now, some factories, especially those in export processing zones, EPZs, or those really adept at using bonded import channels, they might be able to clear imported steel a bit faster. But, and this is important, high-grade materials, Nuge alloys, or materials needing very specific certs, like that EN 10204 3.2 for full traceability, or DFARS for U.S. defense.
Yeah.
Those are very rarely kept in large stock volumes. It's just too specialized, too much risk for the supplier to hold inventory.
So the takeaway seems pretty clear. You absolutely have to build an extra buffer time if you're ordering anything non-standard.
Definitely.
Especially if those parts are destined for regulated markets, aerospace, medical, defense, where the material certs are non-negotiable.
Exactly right. Plan for that material import lead time.
Okay, so we've got longer lead times. What about the other big one? Cost. That example from the source was pretty dramatic.
It was. Quoting the same CNC machine part, first in just standard mild steel, then in 17:4 stainless steel.
And the price?
More than doubled. And the key point was, it wasn't because the machining was harder or took longer.
It was the material itself.
Primarily, yes.
Yeah.
The raw material cost and all the complexity tied to importing that specific stainless grade.
So imported materials really drive up the final product cost significantly.
They do. And it's due to a whole stack of factors. You've got the international base price of the metal itself, which fluctuates.
Right. Market prices.
Then you add shipping costs, ocean freight, port fees, then potential import duties or tariffs, depending on the material and origin, though sometimes bonded trade helps there.
Okay.
You've got exchange rate risk, the USD versus the Vietnamese dong, for instance, that adds volatility.
Uh-huh.
There's the inventory risk for the supplier if they do decide to stock some material. They have to factor in the cost of holding that.
Makes sense.
And finally, as we discussed, the cost of quality control and traceability. Getting certified inspections, ensuring those certs are correct, that adds a significant cost, especially for critical components where failure is not an option.
So our source broke down these cost impacts, right? Can you recap that?
Yeah, it's helpful to think about it in chunks. The base metal price, driven by global indices like LME or SGX, that has a medium impact on the final part cost. International freight and port charges, also generally a medium impact.
They're right.
Import duties. This one can vary low to high impact, depending on the specifics, but bonded trade can sometimes mitigate it.
Gotcha.
Exchange rate, that's a variable risk. Suppliers usually build in some buffer. Stocking risk if the supplier holds inventory. medium impact.
And the big one.
Quality control, inspection, traceability, certifications. For critical parts, that's often a high impact factor on the cost. It takes time, expertise, and documentation.
Okay. So knowing all this complexity, lead time impacts, cost drivers, what can you actually do about it when you're sourcing? The article had some practical tips.
It did. One really good suggestion is to ask your suppliers to quote the material costs separately from the machining or fabrication cost.
To get transparency.
Exactly. It helps you see where the money's actually going and evaluate options better. Maybe a slightly different, more available alloy could work if the cost difference is huge.
Good idea. What else?
Well, for more standard parts, if absolute top spec material isn't critical, see if a locally available equivalent might work. That can often save you significantly on both cost and lead time.
But,
and it's a big but, for those high precision parts or components going into critical applications where failure could be catastrophic,
yeah,
then using that specific, certified, likely imported steel is often completely non-negotiable. You just have to accept the higher cost and potentially longer lead time as part of getting the part made correctly and safely.
So it's about understanding the trade-offs for your specific application.
Precisely. Know what you need, ask detailed questions about the material sourcing, and understand the implications up front.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. The main takeaway from our deep dive today seems clear. Vietnam's metal manufacturing sector uses a real blend of local and imported raw materials.
That's right. It's not all one or the other.
But crucially, for the kind of export quality complex or custom parts many listeners might be sourcing, imported materials often play the dominant role.
Especially when specific alloys, grades, or certifications are required.
And this directly shapes the price you pay, the lead time you face, and ultimately whether your project is even feasible to produce there.
It's a fundamental factor to understand.
So, thinking beyond just the immediate project, considering this really intricate web of global material sourcing flowing into Vietnam, what might be the bigger, maybe longer-term strategic implications?
That's a great question to ponder.
Like, for global manufacturing resilience, or maybe even how this sourcing mix affects future innovation possibilities. It seems like this granular detail could have some pretty wide ripples.
Absolutely. How dependent does a rapidly growing manufacturing hub want to be on external sources for critical inputs? What does it mean for supply chain security in turbulent times? Lots to think about.
Indeed. Definitely something for all of us to mull over. Thanks for breaking that down.
My pleasure. It's a fascinating dynamic.